You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, 25 years ago, Mikhail Gorbachev resigned as president of the Soviet Union. This act marked the end of the communist government in Russia and other newly formed or reformed countries. Still has echoes in today's global politics. We'll hear about that coming up. First, Wisconsin Attorney General Brad Schimmel sat down with us last week to take a look back at 2016 and to talk about his priorities for 2017. It was an eventful year with some ongoing challenges like opioid abuse and new issues like a backlog of untested rape kits and decisions on how to proceed after court rulings on the John Doe investigation. Attorney General Schimmel, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start, a lot we want to get through, but let's start with the opioid addiction problem here in Wisconsin. This has been a big issue for you, for legislators, for public health officials around the state. What's the latest in your efforts to turn the tide?
Well, we've seen some encouraging results from our public awareness campaign. We launched the Dose of Reality campaign back in September of 2015, and since then we really had two drug take-back days where that campaign's been in effect, and we've seen dramatic increases in the amount of medications that are being turned in by citizens. In our April drug take-back day, we collected over 64,000 pounds.
Wow. I thought you were going to say pills, pounds.
Pounds. That made us number three in the nation. Only Texas and California collected more, and California only collected 200 pounds more than Wisconsin. Then fast forward to October, when we did the next drug take-back day, we were number two in the nation. Only Texas beat us out, and they beat us by 600 pounds. What that tells me is that this is taking hold. Our message to people is that you need to use prescriptions as prescribed to you. Store them safely and securely, and when you're done, dispose of them properly. We know that 70% of the time when people start abusing prescription painkillers, they didn't get them from a doctor, they didn't get them from a traditional drug dealer, they got them from a family member or a friend who shared or you stole them. So if we can get that under control, we can start attacking this problem. And I think seeing those kind of drug take-back results is huge news. We've collected over 207,000 pounds in the last 2 years.
And you've told us before, I think, just because it's not drug take-back day today, that doesn't mean right. You can't dispose of your medications. There are options
right.
year-round.
And actually, most of what's being brought together on those 2 days every year is coming from evidence rooms at the police departments where people turn it in every day. You're absolutely right on that. And there's one other aspect, too, that's got some encouraging news. Our Dose of Reality was also aimed at the medical community, and they've stepped up. Our medical examining board announced that the new guidelines that will go into effect at the beginning of the year that are more aggressive than what the CDC announced earlier this year. Our dental examining board is going to announce guidelines as well, I'm told. If they do that, they'll be the first dental board in the nation to have prescribing guidelines. And we saw between the quarter right before we announced the Dose of Reality campaign or kicked it off and the same quarter this year, we saw a 10% decrease in opioid prescribing. It's been a long time since we've seen a drop.
And I want to compare this to the crack epidemic back in the 80s. Looking back at those days, that was seen, I think, almost 98%. This is a law enforcement problem.
Absolutely.
It seems like the balance here is, yes, there's law enforcement, there's public health, there's compassion, and there's treatment. And I know you're looking for more funding for treatment alternatives in the courts. Is that right?
Yes, you're absolutely right. We went after, and you know, back in the days when we had the crack epidemic, there were drug houses in that traditional sense people think of. Now we don't have that. Now a drug house is a cell phone. It's usually a throwaway phone that the dealer keeps for a week or two, and then they'll meet you in a parking lot somewhere, usually in a car that's either stolen or it has false plates on it. There's no way for us to track them down the way we used to. And this is a public health crisis. We can't focus. We do need to go after those who are trafficking heroin and fentanyl and the pills, but we have to focus on prevention. And we have to focus on getting people who are already struggling in treatment. You're right.
One challenge, there was just an arrest in western Wisconsin, a series of arrests. Meth was involved in that, too. This is multi-jurisdictional. As you say, it's not this house in our community. It can cross city right. lines, county lines, state lines really quickly. Is that an extra challenge?
Absolutely. And that's what the Vernon County Sheriff reflected in that large-scale bust was they found themselves very quickly in La Crosse and then in the Twin Cities. These things are moving all along the freeways, and it is a challenge for us. The bottom line is, as long as the demand exists, someone will take care of the supply. We can, every time we take down a drug dealer, there's somebody coming in to take their place. We need to keep working to have every Wisconsinite recognize the dangers of starting to experiment with abusing prescription painkillers.
Well, shifting gears now to the John Doe investigation, there have been investigations that had been going on a long time, aftermath still being felt. There was a big leak of material that wasn't supposed to be leaked in that. You are looking at opening up a grand jury, I think, investigation into that.
Yes, that's what we're looking at as probably the only option we have. This isn't going to be a traditional investigation where you knock on doors, go to see people at their business. These are all government officials we need to interview. We know where they are. It's easier to set up interviews in that courtroom setting than to go track them down at their workplace. We can't use a John Doe to do this. That wouldn't fit the statute. We tried to have a special master appointed by the Supreme Court, and they disagreed, and I get why, because they'd like to extricate themselves from the investigation, and that makes good sense. The judicial branch typically doesn't do investigations. So it made sense that they declined that. So really a grand jury is our option that's left.
What would be the timeline on that?
Things are actually moving pretty quickly right now.
So we could see something early in 2017?
Yes.
What are you hoping comes out of this? You're hoping to obviously find out who leaked these documents.
Right. That's what we're looking to see, whether we can determine where the leaks were.
And you've called in the past for changes to the John Doe laws in Wisconsin. Are you still hoping for that? What would you like to see?
Well, the changes that occurred, I can live with. Mm-hmm. There was some talk about getting rid of that as a tool for prosecutors altogether. I wanted to avoid that. It is a valuable tool for prosecutors working on a missing persons case, a homicide case, a drug conspiracy case. There are effective ways to use that, and I didn't want to see prosecutors lose that tool altogether.
And it's been taken off the table mostly for political issues.
Right.
Do we have the tools in the state to avoid corruption and other improprieties, quid pro quo, right, donations, things like that?
We do have the ability to use the grand jury. It's more cumbersome because you have to assemble citizens and make those arrangements, whereas the John Doe is simply in front of a judge. It's more cumbersome, but we have that tool. We've never lost that.
Talking to Wisconsin State Attorney General Brad Schimmel, covering some big issues out of 2016 going into 2017. A lot of media reporting around the country and cities and here in Wisconsin on untested rape kits, backlog supposedly. Now, you took some issue with how this was characterized in a USA Today Wisconsin investigation.
Yes, because frankly, what's happening in Wisconsin is we're leading the nation. Out of the two granting authorities, the proposal we made got the largest grants in the nation from both of the granting authorities because we've proposed a statewide solution. There's very few places that are doing that. Most of the time they're approaching it as a city or a county issue. We're taking on the whole state, which takes more work, but it's the right thing to do. And we're also doing this from a victim-centered approach. You cannot take away the power of a victim to control their destiny. You can't now say because they submitted to this test and they've never consented to having that test, this kit being tested, we can't just take away that power from them. So we are going back to the crime victims who were subjected to these intrusive tests to make sure they approve of doing this. The other thing we're not doing is testing kits we don't need to test. In many of the states, they're doing what is called the forklift approach. They're just coming in, they're taking all of the kits and they're submitting them for testing. That's clogging up the labs that are capable of doing this work with backlogs, because if we've already convicted someone, we'll get their DNA sample. We've already got that on the system. There's no need to go back and test that sexual assault kit anymore.
Is there a hope that by testing more kits, we'll be able to identify serial sexual assault perpetrators and maybe solve some currently unsolved cases?
Yes, that's exactly the hope.
So maybe we want that forklift approach? Maybe we want more of that data?
Well, we've got the data already. Once a person's convicted of certain crimes in Wisconsin, they are then required to submit a DNA sample through the court process. We will have put that on the data bank already. To go back and test the sexual assault kit on an offender we've already convicted and identified doesn't make any sense. You're just duplicating efforts.
My understanding is that maybe there's been that reported rape, a rape kit is sitting there untested. It's not attached to that perpetrator who's given DNA yet. If we test it, we might find that they're culpable in more cases than we knew about previously.
Yes, but as long as we've already got their profile, we'll be comparing that on the data bank and we'll already make that link.
But there's an untested kit there, I'm saying, that maybe perpetrator X it will be identified there in a case that we hadn't attached them to previously. Does that make sense?
I do think I understand your question. The point is, if we've already identified who committed the offense in this sexual assault for which a kit was drawn, if we've convicted them, we already have their DNA. We don't need to go get it from the kit as well. Now, if we've got an unknown offender, those are the kits we're testing.
Okay.
That's what we're doing.
I think I follow that. One more issue I want to get into, Wisconsin's redistricting and some other election laws may be on the road to the Supreme Court?
We expect so.
The U.S. Supreme Court, should specify.
Yes. There's no guarantee, but we expect so. There's never been a political redistricting case, which is what this one is, that's been upheld all the way to the Supreme Court. Racial-based redistrictings have been struck down in the past. This is a novel approach, so we expect the Supreme Court will be interested. And it doesn't just affect Wisconsin. This will affect state houses nationwide.
Right. Past cases, as you mentioned, have said, okay, African-American voters have been unfairly disenfranchised. You got to change that. This case says mathematically Democratic voters' votes are underrepresented, are effectively disenfranchised. And this is a new mathematical model to prove it. So what kind of things are you looking at as you would argue this case?
Well, one of the arguments we make is that you have to take into account and the mathematical theory that the challengers are proposing doesn't take into account that you get districts where it's just areas where it's just natural that people of the same kind of political persuasion will live. In the urban areas like Milwaukee and Madison, they're very, very heavily Democratic. And it's very difficult to not see the vote in that area watered down to some extent when you go to counties like Waukesha and Washington, which are very heavily Republican. You get the same effect there, but the opposite party. So that's our argument. Ultimately, we do expect the Supreme Court will take this. Justice Kennedy, as in the past, looked at cases and said, you know, this is okay. I'm not going to vote to strike this down, but there is the potential that a case could go so far in its political redistricting that I would strike it down. Now, our argument is that there have been other state redistricting maps that have been more partisanly charged than what happened in Wisconsin that have been upheld. So under those circumstances, you should be able to predict what's legal based on what courts have decided before.
Point of curiosity, would you be arguing this in person in front of the U.S. Supreme Court or a designee of your office?
Oh, a designee. We'll have someone from our Solicitor General's office do that. These are much sharper lawyers than I.
You never get to have the fun.
I had 26 years in the courtroom.
Fair enough.
My fun.
Attorney General Schimmel, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
Republican Brad Schimmel has been Wisconsin's Attorney General since 2015. He joined us for a look back at 2016 and to talk about his priorities in the coming year.